This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Entrapping Barack Obama, the underlying politics of the NAFTA disclosure. Monday, March 3rd, Democratic presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton accused Barack Obama of misleading voters in Ohio while giving the Canadians the wink-wink over his tough talk on North American free trade. A memo that had been obtained by the Associated Press and later by CanWest News Service suggested that Obama's economic policy advisor, Austin Goolsbee, had privately told Canadian officials to look at the Democratic candidate's attack on free trade as, quote, political positioning rather than policy. Clinton jumped immediately on the memo as evidence of doublespeak from her rival on the North American Free Trade Agreement. This was a very touchy subject in Ohio, where blue-collar workers blame NAFTA, and rightly so, for huge job losses in the manufacturing sector. In fact, over 200,000 jobs have been lost in Ohio alone as a result of NAFTA. Clinton, however, said that Obama's campaign gave the Canadians, quote, the old wink-wink. She went on to say, I don't think people should come to Ohio and tell the people of Ohio one thing and then have your campaign tell a foreign government something else behind closed doors. This Clinton issued in a statement. She went on further to say, quote, I think that's the kind of difference between talk and action that I've been talking about. She said this to reporters while campaigning in Ohio, campaigning ferociously to make a difference because Barack Obama was on a swing gaining state by state, moving towards the Democratic Party candidacy. It raises questions, she said, about Senator Obama coming to Ohio and giving speeches against NAFTA. Giving speeches against NAFTA. Is there a real difference between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama? Did Obama advisor Austin Goolsbee say what was in the memo? Had he met with officials of the Canadian consulate in Chicago? And what actually had been said? It was later revealed that the memo was written by Joseph DeMora, who works for the consulate and attended the meeting. Who is Joseph DeMora? What actually is behind this memo? Noting anxiety among U.S. domestic audiences about the U.S. economic outlook, Goolsbee candidly acknowledged the protectionist sentiment that has emerged, particularly in the Midwest during the primary campaign, read the memo. He cautioned that his messaging should not be taken out of context and should be viewed as more about political positioning, he referring to Barack Obama, political positioning than a clear articulation of policy plans. So read the memo of Joseph DeMora. What actually was happening? Was it political positioning on the part of Barack Obama? Today on Taking Aim, we discuss the underlying politics of this so-called NAFTA disclosure. Ralph?
Well, Maya, what we've been describing over a period of many weeks on Taking Aim is the virtual identity between the politics of these various political figures in the Democratic Party, notably Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Because almost all of the national security and key advisors and key policymakers for Barack Obama are former high-level functionaries and national security figures and military personnel and intelligence operatives of the Clinton administration itself. So you're really talking about peas in a pod. And yet, what are the underlying dynamics of this conflict between these two figures of the same ruling class apparatus? There is an interesting article in the World Socialist website by Bill Van Auken on March 10th, which actually rather neatly synopsizes many of the things that we have been saying over a period of weeks, called Clinton's National Security Campaign and Obama's Political Dilemma. And in elucidating what underlies this NAFTA dispute, the article is extremely clear about the identity of positions and what underlies their conflict. Indeed, I want to emphasize here that even as these disputes are unfolding, the national security campaign of both parties was elucidated by an extraordinary press conference in Washington, D.C. last Thursday, in which Hillary Clinton appeared with 13 senior military officers before a massed array of American flags, the top brass invited to weigh in on the national security capability and Obama's lack thereof. And this is indeed the underlying background to this dispute about NAFTA, which we're going to discuss in particular detail. But I want to emphasize here that Lieutenant General Joe Ballard, who has been designated as one of the key figures for Hillary Clinton and was the commander of the Army Corps of Engineers for Bill Clinton, set forth the thesis that the phone ringing at 3 a.m. was the key issue for the campaign. What we are confronting here is an attempt to suggest that the defining element for any presidential candidate will be to take a pre-dawn phone call in order to drop bombs on people in some corner of the world without compunction, that there will be from day one no hesitation, no learning on the job, no addressing the public perceptions of the imperialist policy, but direct, immediate genocidal response to any demand by the military apparatus and of the ruling class itself. Those are indeed the defining elements that underlie this to the putative dispute, to the point where Clinton has been stating that both she and John McCain are ready to do what is necessary, but that Obama is not, implying that when it comes to it, people should select McCain over Barack Obama.
Well, Ralph, what you're saying is very important, but let's go back to the NAFTA disclosure, because this, all the pundits have said, made a real difference in Ohio, where Obama was closing the gap with Hillary Clinton and could possibly have taken Ohio. And it also had a big effect in Texas, and particularly in the Obama message. He had been putting forward a message that he was the person to bring forth change in the United States. And for a while there, he stopped his message. And as you point out, the campaign has definitely moved to the right. So what happened immediately afterwards was that Senator Obama had acknowledged that his senior economic advisor, Austin Goolsbee, who, by the way, is a professor at the University of Chicago, that he had spoken to a Canadian government official about the Obama's position on NAFTA. In fact, it was reported that Austin Goolsbee had spoken with the Canadian ambassador, but in fact, he hadn't. He had spoken with a consul general in Chicago. And it was actually not a meeting that was elicited by Austin Goolsbee and the Obama campaign. He wasn't even speaking officially for the Obama campaign. It had been a meeting that had been requested by the Canadians, and it had been requested by them after the Clinton campaign had approached the Canadians to discuss her position on NAFTA. And the Obama campaign disputed the Canadian government memo that suggested that Goolsbee had told the Canadian government that his anti-NAFTA rhetoric, quote, should be viewed as more about political positioning than a clear articulation of policy plans. Nobody reached out to the Canadians to try to reassure them, Obama said while he was in Texas. Unbeknownst to the rest of us, they reached out to Mr. Goolsbee, who provided them with a tangible conversation. And by the way, it was only a conversation of a few minutes with regard to NAFTA, and repeated what we've said on the campaign trail, Barack Obama said, which is that we believe in trade with Canada. We believe in trade with Mexico. But we think in that the terms of NAFTA have to be altered so that the labor standards and the environmental standards are enforceable, end quote. Ralph?
Well, Maya, this question of environmental and labor clauses to be attached to the NAFTA agreement is an old one. Indeed, you and I were involved in major organizing of the trade union movement, both in North and South America, and in fact globally, on two occasions. The World Conference for Trade Union Independence, which addressed this very issue of these so-called free trade agreements, which are in fact a mad race to the sweatshop bottom. And with many of the trade unions who were participating in these in this conference, you were the co-chairperson of the second major conference on this question of the so-called free trade agreements and it's the crisis for the working class. Many of the trade union officials had illusions about this question of labor clauses or environmental clauses, and we emphasized and documented and pointed out at the time that any such clauses would be unenforceable because it is only the corporations who make these determinations, and they are largely paper protections. They never translate into anything because this is a mad race to the sweatshop bottom. Jobs are sent out where they can pay people $40 a month, or in New Mexico, they pay people $10 for a 12-hour workday. That's what the meaning of NAFTA is. 500,000 manufacturing jobs destroyed in Mexico alone, and, of course, across the United States, the same thing, as jobs are basically ferreted away from places where there are trade union protections like the United States and across the planet to where there are sweatshop conditions, and then workers are being told unless they meet those conditions, abandon their support, their health care, abandon their pensions, abandon their secure jobs, abandon their full-time work, they will in fact be without work at all. Those are the underlying politics, and these protection clauses are demagogy. Demagogy without substance, but nonetheless, they form the backdrop of the demagogy of the Democratic Party in addressing working class constituents, notably in Ohio, working class, trade union, industrial workers who are without jobs now, without health care, without job security, without pensions, under siege, and in a state of rebellion, in de facto rebellion, contained only by the trade union bureaucracy confining them to this rotten Democratic Party.
And, Ralph, it's such an important issue in the industrial belt of the United States that Senator Hillary Clinton, was distancing herself from the position of her husband, Bill Clinton, because it was Bill Clinton and his vice president at the time, Al Gore, who stumped around the country, who passed NAFTA, who initiated NAFTA, who proposed NAFTA, put forward NAFTA, the benefits of NAFTA, and really made NAFTA a highlight of their
Maya, it's not just a question of their highlighting NAFTA, which is, of course, is exactly what they did. The Democratic Party in the Clinton administration campaigned and governed on the basis of downsizing government. Gore and Clinton and Barack Obama has supported this to the ultimate degree. Downsizing government. Downsizing government means removing workers from the public sector protection, eliminating so-called welfare, which is social service support, which is the reform response of the New Deal to the Great Depression, removing the protections that workers have had across the board, getting lean and mean, removing welfare from the most disadvantaged, which is a form of paying people something below the minimum wage to allow some kind of consumer power to be maintained within the United States. And above all, the so-called free trade agreements, which is to ship jobs out wherever there are cheap wages and low protections for workers so that workers can be whipsawed and pitted against each other in a mad race to the bottom. That has been the agenda of the Democratic Party. That is the agenda of that wing of capital faced with the crisis of late capitalism, unable to meet the needs of people, a falling rate of profit which they must ever increase by reliance on military production. Those are the underlying politics.
So what we saw in Ohio, where Barack Obama was closing the 20-point lead that Hillary Clinton had in Ohio, we saw Hillary Clinton, instead of defending Bill Clinton's positions on NAFTA, the Clinton administration positions on NAFTA, she claimed that Barack Obama was distorting her position because she'd privately, noticed, privately opposed the agreement at the time, quote, and had long been a critic, end quote, and now similarly supported stronger labor and environmental standards. In other words, the same position as Barack Obama. But then on February 27th, days before the March 3rd comments that I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the Canadian network CTV reported that even as Obama was publicly attacking Bill Clinton's role in NAFTA and arguing for a drastic overhaul, that Austin Goolsbee had arranged a meeting with the Canadian ambassador in which Goolsbee had reassured them that this was just political positioning. In other words, that Obama was pandering for the campaign trail. And then Hillary came out with her wink, wink, and is this a man you can trust statements. So how did this all come about? Ralph?
Well, Maya, I think it's essential to understand the sleight of hand, the duplicity, and the underlying politics that define it, because never has a candidate or a political figure been more clearly entrapped than the way that Barack Obama was entrapped with respect to his views on NAFTA, which are virtually identical to those of Hillary Clinton. The Yahoo News of Canada and the Associated Press and the Canadian Press, and an important disclosure by Alexander Panetta on March 6th, revealed, first of all, that the Barack Obama economic advisor, Austin Goolsbee, and by the way, the irony here about Austin Goolsbee is that he was a key figure supporting the austerity politics of the Clinton administration and is linked, in fact, to the free trade agenda and for the removing of protections. That's Austin Goolsbee's track record, and that's his role within the Obama campaign. But it was not Austin Goolsbee who contacted the Canadian consulate in Chicago. On the contrary, it is revealed by Yahoo that the Canadian consulate got in touch with Goolsbee to discuss with him the position of the Barack Obama campaign. And what is revealed in the Yahoo piece is that, quote, specifically, the Clinton camp initiated contact with the Canadian consulate in Chicago. This is before they called up Barack Obama's advisor and told Canadian officials that Clinton's tough talk, and I'm quoting here from Yahoo News and the Canadian Press release, the article by Alexander Panetta, Clinton camp told the Canadian officials that Clinton's tough talk should be taken with a grain of salt. Indeed, it was Clinton who articulated specifically the words, don't pay any attention to what we say about NAFTA in the campaign, because NAFTA is our policy. And we are affirming here that we are not going to touch the trade relations agreements between the ruling class in Canada and in Mexico. Indeed, the article makes very clear that so far from Obama giving a wink-wink to the Canadians, it was, in fact, Hillary Clinton who initiated the contact with Canada to achieve that. So how does the standard assurance of these candidates to their ruling class constituents, not, as opposed to the public, don't worry about the populist rabble-rousing that we do to contain, deflect, diffuse, and co-opt opposition to capitalist policies, will promise them anything now, and of course it'll be the same old as soon as the campaign is over. Those were the words coming out of Hillary Clinton's campaign. What's going on here? The actual memorandum that was released in relation to this meeting, now supposedly about Goolsbee, was written by Joseph DeMora, who is now being made unavailable to talk to anyone. One of the first to orchestrate this story about the memorandum from Joseph DeMora imputing to Goolsbee the statement on behalf of Barack Obama that he was not intending to follow through on his rhetoric about reforms or clauses for NAFTA. The first to orchestrate the story was Norman Spector on radio CFAX in Victoria. Now, let me emphasize, brothers and sisters, that we are indebted to our comrade and our brother in struggle, Mehdi Najjari, who has a radio program in Victoria, for this, for a series of documents and information that allows us to disclose the underlying politics here. In fact, as we've mentioned, I just came back a few weeks ago from a tour in Victoria and Vancouver, where I was speaking on the hidden history of Zionism and the underlying politics of 9/11 for a number of groups that Mehdi Najjari and associates had organized for these meetings. One of the first, as I mentioned, to orchestrate the story is Norman Spector of Radio CFAX in Victoria. Well, who is Norman Spector? He was the chief of staff of the right-wing Prime Minister Brian Mulroney of the Progressive Conservative Party, which is a right-wing party in Canada. Mulroney was the Canadian Prime Minister from 1984 to 1993. It is Brian Mulroney who appointed this same Norman Spector the Canadian ambassador to Tel Aviv. Spector revealed that he worked closely with Joseph DeMora in Tel Aviv. Now, Joseph DeMora is the person who wrote this memo sandbagging Barack Obama with the fiction that it was the Obama campaign that had contacted the Canadian consular official in Chicago, when in fact it was the other way around. It was the Canadian consular official who contacted Goolsbee after the Clinton campaign had signaled to Canada and to the Canadian consul that they shouldn't take seriously her rhetoric about NAFTA. Stephen Harper became the leader of the Conservative Party in Canada in 2002. Stephen Harper is a right-wing neocon closely aligned with the Likud wing of the Zionist state.
Ralph, you neglected to mention here that Spector, Norman Spector himself, who had been appointed the Canadian ambassador to Israel, later became the publisher of the Jerusalem Post.
Thank you. That's very important indeed. And let's be very clear what we're describing here, brothers and sisters. Pay attention to this. Brian Mulroney makes Spector the Canadian ambassador to Israel at Tel Aviv. Spector is working closely in Tel Aviv with Joseph DeMora, the author of this memo. Spector becomes publisher of the Jerusalem Post, a right-wing Israeli paper. Harper becomes leader of the Conservative Party in 2002, closely aligned to the neocons in the United States and to the Likud in Israel. In fact, it is Prime Minister Harper in Canada who is the first government to impose sanctions on Hamas. In fact, in November 2005, just prior to the last Canadian election, which took place in January 2006, the Canadian Jewish Public Affairs Committee, JPAC, was formed. This is a clone of AIPAC, the primary lobby of the Zionist state in the United States, which is a virtual terror apparatus for attacking anyone who does not subscribe to the most right-wing policies of the Israeli state within the American political establishment. It is the Canadian corollary to AIPAC. They declare themselves a nonpartisan organization active in all political parties in Canada, and their declared purpose is, quote, to advance positions supportive of the Israeli government, unquote. It is this Canadian JPAC that takes public credit for the election of the Harper government, the right-wing government. They had positioned members, and this is important to note, in all of the political parties, including the New Democratic Party, which is a socialist party in Canada, where they focused attacks on the Liberal Party as pro-Arab, pro-Palestinian, and pro-terrorist. At a critical point in the campaign, the Liberal Party platform talking points were leaked to a figure named Ezra Levant. Ezra Levant is the publisher of the far-right publication Western Standard. Read today, yesterday's New York Times, brothers and sisters, and you'll see a key article by William Crystal, the neocon editor of the Weekly Standard in the United States, articulating the right-wing Zionist policies of the necessity for an attack on Iran, the weakness of Barack Obama in relation to these views, these positions, the presumptive weakness. The Western Standard is the neocon publication, interestingly enough, tied to David Frum. David Frum is the neocon figure now appearing on CNN, close to George Bush. He is Canadian, and he is the son of Barbara Frum, the CBC TV anchor. Ezra Levant is on the board of directors of what? The Canadian Jewish Political Action Committee, JPAC.
Right. And to reiterate, Ezra Levant is the publisher of the Western Standard, which is the Canadian counterpart to William Kristol's Weekly Standard here in the U.S.
Now, the plot thickens. It is the Harper government, under virtual direction of JPAC, of Levant, of David Frum, of Joseph DeMora, that reverses Canadian positions at the United Nations. The Canadian government had supported resolutions that were critical of Israel when they would do some massive attack in Gaza or a programmed assassination, and there would be mild UN criticisms, UN resolutions about the addition of settlements in the West Bank, posturing as a critic of the extremes of Zionist repression. The Canadian government, like many governments in the UN, positioning themselves to induce the Palestinians to enter into a subordinate relationship with the Israeli state, sustaining Israeli primacy in the region. All reversed. The government of Harper reverses Canadian, they're to the right of Genghis Khan in all these respects. They reverse Canadian positions at the UN, including UN supporting UN resolutions, mildly critical of Israel when there is some particular outrage in the West Bank or Gaza or Lebanon. During the last war in Lebanon, Israel bombed the home of Canadian civilians who were visiting Lebanon, killing all eight members of the Canadian family. The Harper government refused to criticize or condemn this attack or to hold Israel accountable for the death of eight Canadian civilians in the saturation bombing across Lebanon. Israel bombed the United Nations observation compound in place at the Israeli-Lebanese border for over 30 years. For 6 years, the UN had called...
For 6 hours.
Oh, excuse me, Maya, you're right. For 6 hours, the United Nations was calling the Israeli military command, alerting them, you're attacking a military, UN observation post. You're jeopardizing the United Nations members here are just observers. There were 10 calls requesting a cessation of the aerial attacks on the UN compound. The Israeli response was with 2 guided missiles that killed 4 UN observers, including a Canadian, a Chinese, an Austrian, and a Finn. Canada was the only country that refused to issue any condemnation. Now, what all this underlies is the role of the Harper administration and DeMora in entrapping Barack Obama because, as we have outlined here, it is the DeMora memo, not issued by the by George Rue, who had met with Goolsbee in Chicago, but issued by DeMora, bearing no relation to what Goolsbee actually said, that forms the basis of this entrapment of Barack Obama over the Canadian claim that the wink-wink was the Barack Obama's message on NAFTA that was deployed by Hillary Clinton on the eve of the Ohio election to attack Obama as a hypocrite and a liar.
Ralph, we should note here that the story originating in Chicago, the memo that had been released by DeMora, the summary of this meeting, this false summary of this meeting, was sent to Washington, D.C., and then it was from Washington, D.C. that the Canadian Broadcasting Company, CTV, pursued the story as if this was a major national story. And that's what it became. It shifted the campaign in Ohio, put Barack Obama on the defensive, and he stayed on the defensive throughout his campaigns in Ohio and Texas. This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Entrapping Barack Obama, the underlying politics of the NAFTA disclosure. Ralph, I think at this point it would be interesting to talk about something called the Israel factor. The Israel factor is something that was coined by Rosner. Rosner has a blog in Haaretz.
Yeah, Maya, Shmuel Rosner, does not merely have a blog in Haaretz, but Shmuel Rosner works closely with AIPAC. He's closely associated with Likud politics in Israel, and he has been orchestrating a rather high-level Zionist panel, which has been making a virtually day-by-day evaluation of each candidate in the Republican and Democratic Party and rating them according to the support that they are entitled to receive from AIPAC and from the Zionist state. And
well, let's look at the panelists, Ralph, because it is very interesting, and it is day by day. It's meant to shift the politics. The person who had received the highest vote on the Israel factor was Rudolph Giuliani, and then the second person is McCain. But lately, the discussions have been against Barack Obama and pro-Clinton, comparing the two, but McCain is still their number one choice. The panelists include Avi Ben-Zvi, who's a lecturer in international relations at the University of Chicago, Georgetown, and Hebrew University. Then Eitan Gilboa, a lecturer at Bar-Ilan University and a visiting professor at the University of Southern California. Dor Gold, president of the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs and advisor to the Israeli delegation for the so-called Madrid Peace Conference. And he's a former Israeli ambassador to the United Nations. Dan Halperin, who served as a minister for economic affairs at the Israeli embassy in Washington, and he negotiated the free trade area agreement between Israel and the United States. If our listeners aren't aware, there is a special relationship between Israel and the United States, a free trade agreement, which allows Israel to avoid the avoid special taxation on international sales. Alon Pincus, the former Consul General of Israel in New York, who was Chief of Staff for Foreign Ministers David Levy and Shlomo Ben-Ami. He's a member of the Israeli delegation at the Israeli-Syria peace talks in 2000. Zvi Rafia, a consultant commentator on U.S. affairs, who was the Israeli diplomatic mission, served in the Israeli diplomatic mission in Iran and Turkey. Ron Robin, Professor Ron Robin has taught at the University of Haifa. He's the Associate Dean and Professor of Communication at NYU in New York. Yossi Shane, who lectures at Tel Aviv University and Georgetown University. Notice many of these professors, they teach both in Israel and in the United States. And as a statistics expert to look at to go over the questions and to rate them and give numbers is Professor Fuchs, who heads the Department of Statistics and Operation Research at Tel Aviv University School of Mathematical Science, and he is the Haaretz pollster. Ralph?
Well, Maya, I want to emphasize that every one of these people on this panel are people with associations with Israeli intelligence, with Mossad and what have you. These are the ideologues of the Zionist apparatus who are, in fact, if you like, The people who dictate policy, who orchestrate for AIPAC, and who attempt to define the limits of policy discourse, not only within the United States but across the world, and they here have set up the a specific panel called the Israel Factor, which has as its mandate the orchestration of how the campaign in the United States for the presidency will be defined and how they will position themselves in terms of support. This is extremely instructive because week by week there has been this playing out of how they intend to orchestrate their politics. Here in Haaretz on March 5th, What's Wrong with Obama? The Israeli Factor analyzes the Illinois senator's low ranking by the Zionist apparatus. They rank Obama at the bottom. McCain is ranked higher than Clinton, but many of the panelists prefer a Clinton presidency over a McCain presidency because they consider that Clinton is a much more credible and reliable supporter of Israeli plans for attacks upon Iran, for the expulsion of the Palestinian population, for a renewed war in Lebanon, and for taking on Syria. They lay it all out there. And they're very precise in quantifying the extent to which they need to intervene. They examine, for example, on the 4th of February, Obama, true or false, Obama is pro-Palestinian. McCain will appoint James Baker. They lay out the ways in which Obama, by raising questions of change, opens the door to being equal, open to the door to countenancing concerns of Palestinians, notwithstanding the fact that Obama has been very, very careful to show that he is an unequivocal supporter of the Zionist state, an exclusively Jewish state, opposed to any return or right of return of Palestinian refugees, on and on and on. It doesn't matter. What they're concerned about in the Zionist apparatus is that Barack Obama is arousing expectations about placing constraints upon U.S. military adventures, beginning with Iraq. Obama has responded to this orchestrated campaign by the Zionist apparatus, reflected as it is in American and North American politics. Quote, this is on January 29th, Obama slams ugly smears from the Jewish community. And indeed, one of his important Jewish supporters, Lee Rosenberg, was dispatched to ask former Israeli Ambassador Daniel Ayalon why they were coming out in an orchestrated campaign against Obama. Now, Rosenberg is on the board of directors of AIPAC itself, and his support for Obama was considered by the Obama campaign as a trump card for responding to the attack mode of the Zionist apparatus. And indeed, of course, you have it here where the AIPAC, which is linked intimately to the Zionist state politics and the control of political limits within the United States from the point of view of the ruling class, how, in fact, to position the American public's perception of the need to impose the Zionist apparatus plans for expulsion of the Palestinian population, for the dismantling of Arab and Middle Eastern states from Syria to Egypt to Iran, how to deploy this within the political climate of the United States.
Well, Ralph, Barack Obama did go on the defensive, not the offense, but he has had a very defensive position. His words to Haaretz were, quote, my view is that the United States' special relationship with Israel obligates us to be helpful to them in the search for credible partners with whom they can make peace, while also supporting Israel in defending itself against enemies sworn to its destruction. This was in a 60-minute interview that he had with Haaretz, and he wasn't shy, according to Rosner, about explaining why a viable peace has not been achieved. And what Obama has said, and listen closely, because he definitely lays all blame on the Palestinians. He is putting himself forward as a, quote, friend of Israel. He said that particularly in the Palestinian community, there haven't been leaders who have both the will and the capacity to renounce violence as a strategy to resolve the problems and to actually enforce any agreement that might be reached with the Israelis. So this is the position of Barack Obama. Really no different from that of Hillary Clinton. Let me just finish. In 2005, when Hillary Clinton was the first lady, she visited the Zionist state. And as the Sydney Morning Herald noted at the time, quote, visiting the region in 2005 as Senator this was when she was senator, not as first lady. Visiting the region in 2005 as senator for New York, Senator Clinton shunned the Palestinians completely, meeting only Israeli leaders and hearing and expressing only Israeli positions. She particularly galled Palestinians by enthusiastically backing the 700-kilometer complex of walls and fences that Israel is building inside the West Bank, end quote from the Sydney Morning Herald.
Barack Obama made the case, this is March 9th, that he is as strong on Israel as anyone, releasing a position paper in a bid to leave, this is now the Haaretz report, in a bid to leave no room or for doubt on his strong support for Israel. And he articulates this in very clear and explicit terms, i.e., that with respect to Gaza, Israel is entirely to be supported. Barack Obama quickly sent a message to the United Nations opposing any criticism of the starvation of the population of Gaza and of their being under siege. Obama has informed Haaretz that he is in consort with the Jewish Council for Public Affairs in Washington, that he will make his comments on Israel explicit at a rally, that he is spelling out his support for the Israeli state.
And like Clinton, he will speak at APEC convention in March, where many of their policy, the Democratic Party policy statements are made. That's the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. And also Dan Shapiro, a senior advisor to Senator Bill Nelson, a Democrat from Florida, said goodbye to his job, according to Rosner, a job that he had for 6 years. And as Rosner writes, he's as knowledgeable as anyone on Israel and the Middle East. And apart from the real job that he got himself now, that's the real job, he has joined Obama's campaign as an advisor on issues related to Middle East policy. So as a consequence of all this, Barack Obama, in addition to the Zionists that he has on his advisory staff, he is taking on Dan Shapiro, who's considered on the A list by the Zionists. Now, we don't want to say here, please do not take our comments today as saying that the Zionists are controlling the election. No, what we are talking about is specific disinformation campaign that is in the interests of the Zionists, but we have here the interest of the ruling class aligning themselves with the Zionists. Ralph.
The Zionist apparatus within the United States is completely in compliance and in conformity with a major wing of capital, which has unleashed the Zionist state without restraint because the current politics of the ruling class require the dismantling of each Middle Eastern country ad seriatim, because the current politics of the ruling class with the category of terror, with the false flag operation of 9/11, are designed to position capitalism to wage permanent war, because the current politics of the ruling class from McCain to Clinton, with this emphasis on the need to be ready for constant preemptive attacks, require the very agenda that the Zionist apparatus provides for the rulers. But notwithstanding that, when we look at the way these politics unfold, and with specific reference to Canada, we see, for example, Obama already on January 28th in Haaretz spotting what is at work here. "My opponents are trying to weaken my support in the Jewish community," he stated to Haaretz. "There is a constant virulent campaign being waged to avoid my obtaining the nomination." Obama told Haaretz that there is a underground campaign implying that he is a Muslim, of accusing him of not pledging allegiance to the United States, that is being orchestrated across the country. It's interesting, by the way, that when Hillary Clinton went on 60 Minutes, and she was being asked on the 60 Minutes program about his Barack Obama's middle name being Hussein, about the fact that he had been accused with a Muslim father of having been schooled in madrasa, and Hillary Clinton was asked whether, as far as she was aware, or whether, to put it correctly, she was asked explicitly, "What is your view of the claim that Barack Obama is in fact a secret Muslim?" Here's how Hillary Clinton responded to that. She said, "I don't know. I don't think that's true." She said, "As far as I am aware." And the CBS correspondent said, "What are you implying when you say as far as you are aware? Yes or no? Is this disinformation? Is this true or not?" And she said, "Well, as far as I know, it's not true." Now, it's rather as if the CBS correspondent of 60 Minutes had said to Hillary Clinton, "It has been said that you are a closet lesbian." Instead of responding, supposing that had been said to Barack Obama, that, to put it correctly, supposing the CBS correspondent had said to Barack Obama, "There are rumors that Hillary Clinton is a closet lesbian." If Barack Obama were to say that is an outrageous, sexist, and homophobic remark, which is contemptible, and which I repudiate, he had said, "Well, as far as I'm aware, that's not the case." You get the flavor here of the length to which this Zionist cabal and Clinton herself are prepared to go in this positioning to drive the campaigns to the right and to assure the ruling class that they are ruthless enough to do anything when required. Once again, to come back to the underlying politics here, which are, I think, important to emphasize, this is an entrapment. This was a calculated entrapment. This was a design in which Harper, who, by the way, when Harper was campaigning for the prime ministership in Canada, he stated, "We will not cut and run." He said, "We will hunt down the terrorists wherever we find them." He said, "The terrorists are waiting to follow us home to Canada." He repeated all of the shibboleths of the George Bush campaign. It is interesting to note that the Harper prime ministership and the position of the neocon in the Canadian Conservative Party are precisely analogous to David Frum's, William Standard of the the Western Standard of the Canada, the Weekly Standard of William Crystal in the United States. This is the Likud apparatus, the basic operation to conduct a politics of unmitigated false flag operations and support for the forward dismantling of each country in turn, permanent war in the Arab East. This is the underlying politics of the entrapment of the Barack Obama campaign, notwithstanding the limitations, because these are people posturing around a framework which is essentially a shared framework. But as David Frum in the National Post would write on July 26th with respect to what's at stake at Durban 2, referring to the conference against racism, which is planned to unfold in South Africa, that in demanding that Canada walk out of it, that the United States walk out of it, that it is necessary to mobilize opinion within the United States, within Canada, on a global scale, to go after all those who purport to be supporting Palestinian rights, who purport to be raising questions about the thrust of imperial policy in the region, to close ranks and to prepare for the major assaults planned by the ruling class in the nearer future.
And in fact, Ralph, Canada did walk out, say will not participate in the preparations for the UN conference against racism. This will be Durban 2, the first one having taken place also in Durban, South Africa. And Barack Obama had said in February, and was reported in the Jerusalem Post by Hillary Krieger, the Jerusalem Post correspondent in Washington, in her article on February 25th, he had said, quote, "I think there is a strain within the pro-Israel community that says unless you adopt an unwavering pro-Likud approach to Israel, then you're anti-Israel. And that can't be the measure of our friendship with Israel. If we cannot have an honest dialogue about how we do achieve goals, then we're not going to make progress." Well, this was reported February 25th. Then we have the reports from the Canadian Broadcasting on February 27th, the leaking of the falsely written memo on March 3rd, and the consequent comments by Hillary Clinton, the defensive campaign of Barack Obama, and later the move not only about NAFTA, but about other issues such as foreign policy by Barack Obama that shifts his campaign way to the right. Now, as we've said, it has been rhetoric, the notion of change that has been the hallmark of his campaign.
But Maya, I want to emphasize one thing about this. The chief of staff of Stephen Harper, Ian Brody, has admitted that it was the Clinton campaign that approached the Canadians with the recommendation that with the assurance that any posturing about NAFTA would not be implemented by her. And when she did that, Ian Brody has admitted that as chief of staff of Harper, they made the decision to contact somebody from the Obama campaign to entrap them. And it has now been admitted not only that it was Clinton who took this very initiative for which they have sandbagged Barack Obama, but it has been admitted now under pressure within Canadian Parliament by Stephen Harper that the entire operation was, quote, entirely unfair to the Obama campaign, unquote. Joseph DeMora, who wrote the memo, which bears no relation to what actually transpired, they will not allow him to be interviewed. They will not produce him. Consequently, you have a series of articles now appearing which have delineated quite clearly what is at work here. This was an entrapment. This was a designed entrapment. And when we look at the background to it, it is hardly new. It is not now that it has only just begun. It is only the culmination of the underlying politics of framing the choices for the ruling class and for the public in the United States securely within the far-right plans for permanent war for the next major thrust. Both Obama and Clinton state the following. The war in Iraq should be wound down because we have to win the war in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. Wars ahead are on the agenda for all wings of the ruling class.
That's right, Ralph. And that consequently, Barack Obama reiterated his position that he would vow to strike, quote, terrorist targets inside Pakistan, with or without the approval of that country's government. He is certainly making clear that he is no enemy of militarism and that he can serve as a commander-in-chief. In other words, that he is ready to bomb here, there, and everywhere in the interests of the ruling class. And this is what is the underlying politics of all these disinformation campaigns, to show that the What benefits the ruling class is going to be the person who is elected the next president of the United States.
U.S. Jewish leader worried by thrust of White House campaigns, writes Anshel Pfeffer in Haaretz on February 13th. The atmosphere that is surrounding Barack Obama's campaign is presenting a very serious problem. Quote, all the talk about change, without defining what that change should be, arouses expectations in the public and is an opening for all kinds of mischief, Hahnlein stated at a press conference in Jerusalem. Obama has made change a central theme in his campaign. We have a legitimate concern over the zeitgeist around this campaign. And what we are being told here is even to use this rhetoric demagogically, even to arouse expectations in order to co-opt and to seduce and to contain disaffection in the mass of the population is dangerous from the perspective of the Zionist apparatus, of the ruling class itself. They will attempt to co-opt, but they do not want an aroused public looking for change that cannot be produced. That is the dilemma of the ruling class, and that is the conspiring effort to define what politics will be within the framework of the ruling class agenda in the United States. Barack Obama has been set up. Barack Obama has been entrapped. But it is the American people who are the target of all these maneuvers, not merely the ruthlessness of the, quote, monster, unquote, Hillary Clinton. Monster she is, as an instrument of the imperial agenda, for which there are no limits, from assassination to mass suppression, to the destruction of our rights, and even, as we will see shortly enough, the implementation of martial law, as soon as there is a challenge to ruling class politics within this country.
This is Taking Aim with
Rav Shonman
and Maya Shon. Our program today, Entrapping Barack Obama, the Underlying Politics of the NAFTA Disclosure, was recorded on March 10th, 2008 for broadcast March 11th. And it will be up on our website archive at www.takingaimradio.com. You can contact us at takingaim@pacbell.net. That's PACBELL.net. We'll be with you next week.